Welcome to Akem Radio Podcast. We don't need no thought control, says Pink Floyd. And today we're going to talk about thought control versus freedom of mind. What's best? How do we choose? Our guest today is Turi Berg-Nielsen. You are a professor in psychology and a senior researcher in child psychology. And you have practiced Akem meditation for approximately 14 years. And you're currently the head of Akem Germany. Furthermore, you have written a chapter in the book The Power of the Wandering Mind on non-directive meditation in science and philosophy. Your chapter is called Controversies in Psychology and Meditation. Here you start by saying, the virtues of having control over thoughts and emotions are held high among many, especially professionals in cognitive psychology and some practitioners of mindfulness meditation. For the individual and society at large, however, this kind of self-control also has a downside. The focus of self-control should be directed toward external behavior instead of censoring and suppressing thoughts and emotions. The importance of this distinction becomes obvious when practicing non-directive forms of meditation or when performing tasks that require innovative thinking and creativity. So, Turi Berg-Nielsen, what's wrong with some control and discipline?
I'm just amazed of what I have been writing.
Yeah, me too.
Did I say all those wise things?
You did.
What's wrong with control and discipline? Nothing is wrong with control and discipline.
Okay.
Heavens, you need it, and I need it, and we need it when we are sitting here making a podcast. The question is when, where, how, what?
Yeah.
What shall we control?
Mm-hmm.
Shall we control our thoughts, mm-hmm. our behavior, mm-hmm. our emotions,
mm-hmm.
Our attention? When do we do it? When do we not do it?
Isn't that all the same? Control is control.
No, definitely not.
So what's the difference between controlling my behavior and my emotions and thoughts to begin with? Because that's obviously an important distinction in your chapter in this book, isn't it?
It is. You know, people today are very concerned with freedom of speech.
Yeah.
But somehow they tend to forget the freedom of thought.
Mm-hmm.
You remember Søren Kierkegaard?
I do.
The existential philosopher.
Mm-hmm.
He said around 17-something that people are demanding freedom of speech mostly as a compensation for the freedom of thought, which they seldom do.
Oh. Yeah. So
I think that's wonderful. That suits this topic pretty well, because my main point is that we have freedom of thought.
Mm.
We shall have freedom of thought, and we need it.
Mm.
Also, brain researchers have shown us that this is something which also our brain needs.
Health promoting.
Exactly.
And I've been told that the mind is wandering 40% of the time anyway.
40 to 50%
yeah.
of the time anyway.
Whether you like it or not.
And, Christian, do you know when it wanders at most?
When it wanders the most?
Yes.
When you're in love? I don't know when you go for a walk.
It's when you're working.
Oh, that's bad. Or?
No. I think it just proves
mm-hmm.
that we can stay, and that is what a researcher within a brain researcher also has written in another chapter in this book, that we are capable as humans only staying focused for a limited amount of time.
Yeah,
and then our brain,
yeah.
and then our brain needs a break.
Yeah,
and then it starts to wander.
Yeah.
And did you know that half of the time our brain wanders, so our mind wanders.
Yeah.
We're not conscious of it.
Oh, yeah.
It's happening all the time. We are drifting off out to lunch all the time.
So if my mind wanders a lot, I mean, straying around, what difference does meditation do in this respect? Do we need more of it, or do we need mind wandering in a different setting then?
It depends on, first of all, it depends on what kind of meditation you practice. If it's a non-directive form of meditation, you sort of invite your own mind wandering.
Mm.
And why do you have to do that?
Mm.
Well, because what researchers today believe, psychologists as brain researchers, is that the brain doesn't do this, doesn't use oxygen and wander off if it's senseless, it's doing it because it needs to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And they believe it's a kind of processing activity.
Mm-hmm.
So they have also found that the brain regions which are activated during mind wandering are the same brain or are quite similar to the brain regions which are activated during dreaming at night.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that our dreams at night had the same kind of processing function.
Mm-hmm.
It's a way of processing of what you have experienced during the day, during the week. It's rehearsing, you know, things. It is plans for the future, whatever.
Mm. So can we prove that non-directive meditation, like Akim meditation, enhances the mind wandering? Is that possible to show through scanning?
Yes, they found that,
mm-hmm.
that non-directive forms does stimulate mind wandering.
Mm-hmm.
And your question, a very good question, why do we need to meditate? Our mind wanders anyhow.
Yeah.
It does as it likes, sort of. We want to focus on something and do our work, you know, and off it goes.
Yeah.
The point is that by allowing the brain to wander, it processes impressions and experiences. And by doing this after the meditation, it's a bit easier to stay focused.
Yeah. Mm.
Because you have sort of processed, you know, whatever preoccupies you.
Mm.
One is less preoccupied with one's issues after meditation.
But I think we have to elaborate a little on the concept of non-directive meditation versus directive meditation. Akim meditation is supposed to be a non-directive. But could you explain a bit more the difference and how it makes a difference?
We can start with this mind-wandering part. Non-directive meditations, they don't have a specific goal. They don't have you're not supposed to accomplish anything, any specific state, or achieve something. You just, you know, what comes, what happens, happens.
Mm.
You do have a relaxed focus on a meditation sound, a repetition of a sound in your thoughts, not out loud, in your thoughts. But it's very relaxed and very effortless.
But you are focusing on the repetition of the sound. Isn't that some kind of control?
No, not really. I wouldn't say that, because it's supposed to be done as effortlessly and as gently as possible, without pushing aside other content of the mind.
Mm.
All right?
Mm.
Whereas in directive forms of meditation,
mm-hmm.
you specifically try to control or avoid this spontaneous mind wandering.
Mm-hmm.
So the point is to sort of empty the mind of all these thoughts and so on, which can be a pretty strenuous task.
I would suppose so.
Of course.
But you also, as a psychologist, have some arguments against cognitive therapy. What's wrong with that? Trying to get rid of the bad thoughts and focus on the good thoughts? Or am I simplifying too much?
No, I wouldn't say that I'm against cognitive therapy as such, or cognitive psychology as such. Cognitive psychology emphasizes that we as humans can control ourselves by having the right thoughts.
Mm. Think positive.
For example.
I've heard it since,
Yes. And
But there are other cognitive psychologists which are not so preoccupied with this controlling bit and more a focus on people's attitude, mm-hmm. which is also a thing which is an important part of meditation. So, okay, but mm-hmm. let's not go further into that. What's so wrong with his self-control? I think my main point is that we should try not to use too much mental energy in controlling our thoughts or controlling our emotions, because it is pretty difficult to do, and it's pretty useless in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also psychologically is unhealthy.
Mm.
What we should control, and very many psychologists are not specific about this, what one should control is not what is within or your skin, on the inside mm-hmm. of your mm-hmm. skin,
mm-hmm.
but it is what you let out.
Yeah.
How behavior. You behave. Mm. You can think what you think.
Mm.
You can have the dirtiest thoughts, or the, you can have the craziest things. You can have any emotions going on.
Mm.
But what you control is what you express,
mm.
what you say,
mm.
how you behave.
Mm.
But it's nobody's business what's inside your head or heart.
Because the next music piece we're going to play right now is not about dirty thoughts, but at least it's Stevie Wonder saying, I just called to say I love you. So what you think is another thing. But what I say, I love you. I do it every day, by the way.
No New Year's Day to celebrate. No chocolate cup of candy hearts to give away. No first of spring, no song to sing. In fact, here's just no April rain, no flowers bloom, no wedding Saturday within the month of June. But what it is something true, made up of these three words that I must say to you. I just call to say I love you. I just call to say how much I care. I just call to say I love you, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. No summer's high, no warm July, no harvest moon to light one tender August night. No falling leaves, not even time for birds to fly to southern sky. No Libra sun, no Halloween, no giving thanks to all the crew.
Yes, you're listening to Akim Radio Podcast, and we're talking to Turi Berg Nielsen, who's a professor in psychology, and we're talking about the wonders of the wandering mind, and as opposed to, you know, suppression. Could we say that? So what's wrong with some suppression? You know, there's so many bad things we should suppress, isn't it?
Again, my point is that I think there's a certain types of behavior and certain ways of speaking or talking or things we say, like maybe not twittering, you know, 100 Twitters during the weekend and so on. So we need to suppress things about, you know, our behavior, our expressions, but not so much on the inside. And suppression is a mechanism which we might have to use in specific special situations, but not as a solution, a psychological everyday solution to sort of balance our household. I mean, inner household, psychological household. That it's not a good idea because. Let's say, Christian, in front of us, you were very hungry, and in front of us, there's a piece of, you know, some pieces of your favorite chocolate, and you are looking at it, and I'm going to try not to, you know, think of this chocolate, because or else I'm going to eat it, and maybe I shouldn't eat it, maybe I should wait till I have dinner later, and. You're looking at the chocolate and you think, no, out of my mouth. And you may push it away, put a piece of paper over it so you don't have to look at it. And you try to push this chocolate thought out of your head.
Is that possible?
You do it with suppression. One tries. It requires a whole lot of mental energy to do that. And you might be able to manage. Especially if I start talking about something else and I divert your attention to something else. Okay?
That's what good parents do.
Right? But what your mind has to do is to monitor itself, sort of, to check, are there any forbidden chocolate thoughts here now? So, by doing that, you are reminded all the time about what you shall not think of. It's like, try not to think of a pink elephant, and you know, you can't get that out of your head. So it's the same mechanism. So they talk about, psychologists talk about a rebound effect. Think of a boomerang. It comes back to you. All the time, because by pushing it away and keeping it out of your away from your attention, you all the time have to somehow subconsciously check is the forbidden chocolate thought there.
So the advice then is to let the thoughts come and go, and well, the chocolate is there, but
control your hands. Yes, don't pick it up with your hands.
We both heard about the marshmallow experiment a long time ago, and those kids who could resist eating the marshmallow had a more successful life.
Yes.
10, 20,
yes.
30 years later.
Yes.
So behavioral control is good.
Behavioral control we need and is very necessary.
But what is the difference between suppressing a thought and just focusing on something else? Because Akim meditation is much about focusing, well, back on the sound, repetition of the sound in this case, and that's a gentle change of focus, of attention. That's not the same as repression,
no,
is it?
No, it isn't. It isn't. You just divert your attention for some time.
So that's
but
all right.
If that what was on your mind when you, if you're during meditation, you get absorbed in some line of thoughts, a quarrel, or maybe not a quarrel, a discussion you had with your boss, and that keeps popping up during your meditation. Well, you don't suppress that thought in meditation, in non-directive forms of meditation. You just, when you are aware of you're not repeating your sound, you just sort of return to that repetition, but without suppressing. That thoughts of the boss may be there parallel with your repetition, or they may be in the background, or they may disappear, or they may come back.
But somehow, since I'm also a meditator, my impression or experience is that it loses some of its energy, some of its charge, when an intense, bothering, annoying thought is there to begin with, and after meditation it's less intense.
Oh, yes.
For some strange reason.
But not necessarily. It's a parallel to having a nice walk in the woods or something, and you let your mind wander freely. Afterwards, you do feel refreshed.
Mm.
And literally, that's what the brain researchers say. Your brain has recuperated during this walk because it has been processing whatever it finds necessary to process.
Mm. So, but you also advocate that, let me see if I can find your quote, ACA meditation is letting go of censorship. And you draw some parallels to authoritarian regimes. Could a culture where you cultivate mind control, thought control, pave the way for authoritarian regimes? You know, it's an interesting question.
I think it's, you can ask that question. I think that within authoritarian regimes, if we shall go back to this freedom of speech, freedom of thought thing, that most authoritarian regimes do control very much freedom of speech.
But they can't really control
freedom of thought. No. But you have had dictators who have arrested and shot people because of what they presume had been their thoughts. Take Stalin.
Soviet Union, they did brainwashing.
You shot just as many people as, or sent them to gulag, as many as people. But the point is that you are usually today's dictators don't arrest people for what they presume they think.
No.
But, well, are we quite sure about that? Mm. What is happening in Turkey?
Mm.
How much proof have they of people having their thoughts or not the thoughts or a member of some political party, which they shouldn't be? You can have freedom of speech. You can have freedom of thought without freedom of speech.
Mm. Yeah.
But you cannot have freedom of speech without freedom of thought.
Mm.
And that is a paradox in our society today, where one advocates very much the necessity of freedom of speech, and on the other, psychologists are all the time talking about controlling thoughts and thinking only positive
Sounds
thoughts.
Sounds like a contradiction.
It is. Mm. So the more lax you are on one side, the more strict you get on this. Well, I am saying you have to do the opposite.
Mm.
Yes, freedom of speech, but how can you have freedom of speech if you're not allowed to think first?
Some people speak too much and think too little.
Well...
And
so the cultivating the free mind, also when you have unwanted thoughts, being able to accept them and own them, even if you don't like them, and that also goes for difficult feelings, that is a sign of psychological maturity.
Well, that is part of Akim's project, isn't it?
Very much so.
Mm.
You sit there with your closed eyes.
Mm.
You direct your attention inwards. Mm. And who do you meet?
Myself.
You meet, yeah, exactly.
Mm.
And you meet parts of yourselves which you don't like, and you parts of yourselves which you are more okay with.
Mm.
But you sit there with it, and through a free mental attitude, you learn to accept what's there.
Mm.
And that's how we bring up our children, too.
I was going to ask that question because you're also a child psychologist, right? That's your specialty.
Good parents, when a boy is sad because he couldn't do his backward somersault at school, and can't decide about it. A good parent doesn't say to that boy, no, there's no reason to be sad. You're a great boy. You can do that. This is no problem, sir. A good parent acknowledges the feeling and confirms it and tells him, yes, I see, that's difficult, it's tough, you're sad, but you know what? Come here, sit by me, let's talk about it, and maybe afterwards we can practice a little here on the floor, and I'm sure you're going to be able to do that. But being sad about
Sounds like a paradox. You're right. Parents with well-regulated children are not especially focused on control. They even discipline their children less than do parents of children who are not so well-regulated. But that's actually the end of this little conversation of 30 minutes, because time is undisputable. So let's listen to When You Say Nothing at All. It's not a song about meditation, but still, you say it best when you say nothing at all. Sometimes that could be a slogan for Akka meditation.
It's amazing how you can speak right to my heart. Without saying a word, you can light up the dark.